editor and annotator. Prologue. By the time Robert E. Howard sat down to write Hour of the Dragon, he was close to the peak of his powers as a storyteller. He had been writing short stories about Conan the Cimmerian for nearly 5 years, and the character had grown into a unique, well-defined virtual person, whom Howard knew as well as he might a flesh-and-blood friend. The Conan stories turned out to be the perfect match for Howard's style of storytelling. It was a style characterized by a baseline of smooth, cinematic storytelling, liberally spiced with a sort of darkly hypnotic poetry, and occasionally split by flashes of terse, evocative action, a style that's hard to compare with that of any other writer and virtually impossible to imitate. As a storyteller, Howard did some things very right. Perhaps most importantly, he used his considerable talents as a poet with remarkable subtlety to evoke the feel of a scene without being obvious about it. Many people who claim to categorically detest poetry are huge fans of Howard's prose style. Perhaps that's because he uses poetic tools in a completely unself-conscious way, the same way he might use any other storytelling tool when the occasion seems right. Howard's camera control, which he uses so effectively to charge up the subtext of his stories, is another thing that marks his work off from that of other pulp writers. His writing is very visual, showing you things that are happening and assuming that you will understand what those things mean. This means the reader is almost as involved in telling a Conan story as is Howard himself, and that's another reason his work is so compelling. Another very nice characteristic of Howard's writing for our purposes is that when it does fail, it fails cleanly. When Howard's writing falls into narrative missteps, as it does a couple of times in this novel, it does so in ways that are easy to understand and learn from. This likely has a great deal to do with the pace Howard had to keep up and the limited editing services that were available from his usual market, the perpetually financially tottering Weird Tales magazine. And it's a good reminder of the fact that Howard's work, like most pulp stories, is best compared with a third draft of a mainstream novel. The power and storytelling are there, but the polish that masks the rough spots of a more finished novel is missing. The presence of so much subtlety and poetic sensibility in Howard's writing is ironic, because over the years Howard as a writer has been typecast in the same way as has Conan as a character. Since 1936, Conan has appeared in dozens of movies, comics, video games, TV shows, and pastiches by other authors. As Howard scholar Patrice Loinet pointed out in his introduction to the first volume of the Del Rey collection of Conan stories in 2002, the result has been the same thing that happened to the original Tarzan of the Apes, the urbane, intelligent, trilingual character as created by Edgar Rice Burroughs in 1914, who bears very little resemblance to the "Me Tarzan, you Jane" caricature that most people think of today when they hear his name. Quote, "It is often impossible to recognize Howard's character in the iconic image of the fur-clad, hyper-muscled superhero he has become in the public's mind," Loinet writes. Loinet's remark is, if anything, too charitable. Most people seem quick to assume that Conan is a wooden-headed, iron-thewed uber-jock, stomping through the world, a muscle-bound, amoral dolt offering himself for the hero worship of the weak. And by the same token, many still think of Howard himself as a crude and unsubtle churner out of grunt fiction. No less a literary light than Stephen King has articulated this position in his book Danse Macabre, in which he somewhat grudgingly praises the, quote, force and fury of his writing while calling his material, quote, puerile. You also don't have to look too hard to find claims that Howard was ripping off Lovecraft, which is a charge I always find amusing. Their styles are so completely different, in the same way Hemingway is different from Fitzgerald and Picasso is different from Klimt, that I rather think the only way you can make that case is to have not read much of Howard's work. Such criticisms fall apart pretty quickly under close scrutiny. A more useful assertion comes from Michael Moorcock's pen in his book Two Gun Bob. Quote, "The ability to paint a complex scene with a few expert brushstrokes remains Howard's greatest talent," he writes. "And such talent can't, of course, ever be taught." Ah, but it can. In fact, that's one of the key purposes behind the publication of this book. Before we launch into reading Hour of the Dragon, it's necessary to mention one thing. Racism. Robert E. Howard was an unusually progressive fellow for a man born and raised in the heart of Texas in the 1920s, but that isn't saying much. He was a staunch